Okay, you're live.
I am waiting to see if any attendees are joining. Here we go. Here they come. Okay. I see we have a quorum on our side. We have some folks dialed in. So let me get started. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to call to order the May 3rd, 2021 hearing of the Hood River Planning Commission. My name is Mark Frost, and I'll be presiding tonight as chair of the Planning Commission. Let me start with a description of tonight's process and a few disclosures required by state law. First, it is our function in this land use case to review the record for each application, take public testimony in a hearing such as this, and determine whether the application meets or does not meet the applicable approval criteria in the Hood River Development Code. Second, we are required to render an impartial decision on each application. This means we cannot have a personal financial stake or bias that would prevent us from making an impartial decision. Before we begin, I will call for disclosure of bias, ex parte contact, and conflict of interest from each of the commissioners. Anyone in the audience will then have an opportunity to question any of us about those disclosures. Our decisions tonight will be final unless appealed to City Council. To appeal one of our decisions, you must participate either orally or in writing before the record closes on the item you are interested in. You must raise before us and provide evidence of any issue you might wish to preserve for a subsequent appeal to City Council or LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals. Once we have closed the record on an item, that will end your ability to raise new items or present evidence. Let me describe the order of events for the first hearing in tonight's agenda. First, we will hear the staff report, which is a verbal rendition of the written report that was issued prior to tonight's hearing. Second, the applicant may present testimony. Third, we will hear from those in favor of the proposal. Fourth, we will take any neutral testimony or questions. After that, we will accept testimony from the appellant. Anyone opposed to the proposal. Finally, the applicant has the right of final rebuttal. The applicant has the last word because an applicant has the burden of proving compliance with the mandatory approved criteria. After that, we will check to see if the staff has any parting comments following the conclusion of all public testimony. After everyone interested in these matters has a chance to testify, we will close the record, deliberate, and may render a decision tonight. Our decision, however, is not final until reduced to writing and officially issued. Here are some basic rules for presenting tonight's testimony. Number one, only present testimony when you are called upon. So raise your hand and we will promote you to a speaker. Number two, begin with your name and mailing address. Three, please limit your testimony to the applicable approval criteria identified in the staff report. Note that failure to raise constitutional or other issues related to the proposal conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow us to respond to the issue will preclude an action for damages in circuit court. Finally, we may set time limits on the presentation of testimony tonight, although there is no limitation on written arguments that may be submitted. So that is by way of a procedural introduction for tonight's hearing. If anyone has any questions about the process as we go forward, please feel free to ask them during the public testimony portion of the hearing. So now we will consider a hearing for file 2020-35, an appeal of the director's interpretation relating to the modification of a non-conforming structure on the application of Happy Healthy Homes. A quorum of the Planning Commission is present, and I will now ask all commissioners to disclose any ex parte conflicts, conflicts of interest and bias in this matter. So let me go down the list as I see it, just to get everybody on the record here. So I'll start with Bill.
Yes, I do not have any, I don't have any ex parte contact or conflict or bias in this matter.
Thank you, Bill. Erica?
I have no conflict of interest, ex parte, or bias.
Thank you, Erica. Amy?
I have no ex parte, conflict of interest, or bias.
Megan?
I have none of the above.
And this is Chair Frost, and I have none of the above. Would anyone in the audience like to question any commissioner or on any disclosure, ex parte contact, bias or conflict of interest, or otherwise challenge the participation of any member of the commission? So if so, raise your hand and we will promote you. Give you a second to do that. And while you're doing that, if would any commission member like to make a motion to disqualify any other commissioner from a hearing this application? Okay, I don't see any on the panels and on the discussion.
Yep. Mr. Chair, just for the sake of the record, Commissioner Lassen has recused herself and is not a part of the panel, nor the decision-making body, just for the purpose of those listening and for the record of the minutes.
Okay. All right, then I will move it to the staff report. Dustin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to take you through the staff report that was issued in March. This is my original decision, and I'll walk you through some of the criteria and the history. And we have a couple people here in the audience who have participated and have information in the record. I got some additional information after I sent out this packet to you all. So I believe you should have had that emailed to you directly. The appellant as well as the applicant have also been emailed that information. Most of that came by way of email on Friday. So I sent that over to you earlier. That should be included in the record. Again, this is a request, an appeal of an administrative decision. The information here included should be within your packet is now part of the record. Again, the Planning Commission's request is to hear this and render its decision based upon the evidence submitted as well as the interpretation of the code, which applicable code here really revolves around 1705, which is the code regarding non-conforming uses and non-conforming structures. As described in the report, this unit was built originally in 1980, and subsequent to that in 2006, the city established a lot coverage requirement, which would limit the amount of structure, amount of parking, and amount of driveway that could be built on a lot. And with that adoption, this use and as built, this structure, actually the structure became non-conforming in the use because it exceeded the lot coverage requirements. So therefore, when a building permit was requested for this structure to build the deck, it required me to interpret the code and therefore and interpret the code regarding the non-conforming status of this building and the permissibility regarding any modifications or changes. That's a land use application, and therefore those interpretations require us to provide notice. So we paused the building permit. We required the applicant to submit this this interpretation request, which was submitted to the residents in 250 feet of the lot. And I produced the interpretation, which is included in the packet. Some of the key provisions that we look at come under 1705.030, which is the non-conforming structure. It discusses the ways and the limits to which structures may be altered or changed. Within that, on page 9 is really some of the fundamental findings of this structure, and the site really does not change by way of coverage requirements, because the area in which the building and the deck as proposed is already calculated in the lot coverage. Again, this is a lot coverage requirement, not a building footprint requirement. So on page 9, it's 10 in your PDF packet, it includes the a small chart of before and after calculations. And that really ends up being a net zero increase in lot coverage before and after the request. This continues on, and this code section continues on with some exceptions that allow that are allowed and provided to residential uses, allowances that include opportunities for rebuilds, continuations, modifications, and actually enlargements. And in this request, on page 11, I describe some of the findings in which essentially the before and after really the code provides some clearance for residential enlargements when the use predates and the code requirement. So within that, with no net increase of lot coverage before and after, there is there's an approval administrative approval, which was subsequently appealed, and now Planning Commission becomes the arbiter of the request. You look at the staff findings, you look at the grounds of the appeal, and it's now the request of the Planning Commission to look at this code criteria and its application and how it applies and make its decision or make its recommendation or its decision regarding the status and whether this request meets the code. I wanted to address some notions that came up in some of the comments. A lot of people refer to this as a variance and objected to the granting of the variance. And I think it's important to mark that distinction because the criteria are different for a variance and a change to a non-conforming use. You had a case in the past where the applicant had requested to increase the size of the building and expand the building into an area where it was prohibited in the height. This is different, a little bit of a different animal because they're really not asking to change any status or criteria from what is conforming into a non-conforming status or increase the non-conformity. So the variance request isn't heard and the variance request isn't actually administered, which you would administer that request. And this is touched on in the staff report lightly when it comes to findings for 1705-040, when it comes to setbacks being maintained, height being maintained, and that needs to be addressed not only in my report, but should be also recited in your findings as well. So there's a little difference. If the applicant were to seek some change that had an encroachment into the setback, increase the amount of coverage from where it is now, increase the height, they would be required to receive a variance prior to any approval of a modification or change. Since it's a net neutral by way of coverage where they don't currently don't conform, this is reviewed as an interpretation or modification of a legal yet non-conforming structure. So that's really kind of a procedural ramp up. I'll be here for questions, any comments that you may have, be happy to assist if you have any questions during deliberation.
Okay, thanks. Any questions from the commission to Dustin on that introduction? Staff report.
Dustin, maybe I'll highlight one thing. For maybe audience members and commission members, we did process a request for pretty recently for 10 East Point Court, right? And that one we did process as a variance. And you just clarified for us why we're not processing this one as a variance, right? You want to comment on that particular case a little bit?
Yeah, so that was an instance where you had a legal yet non-conforming structure, but the request was to enlarge the structure into an area that into a new space to expand. It expanded the nonconformity. So it wasn't a zero conformity issue. It actually, the nonconformity and the new area expanded into where the height wasn't permitted. It was a new increase in a new area. Therefore, in order to grant an expansion of a nonconformity to expand the nonconformity, they would be required to get a variance.
Okay.
So there's some subtleties there, but the request here is to not expand the nonconformity. Therefore, the variance is not requested.
Thanks.
Any other questions from the commission? All right. In that case, we will move on to the applicant's testimony. So that is Susan Donnan. If you could raise your hand, we will promote you. Okay. Here you go. All right. You want to come off mute, and then we are here. Hello.
Hi there. Thank you.
We hear you.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, we appreciate everybody's time, you know, in doing this.
You're a little faint, if there's a way you can just.
Better?
Okay, keep going.
Okay. So just a little bit of background. You know, we've separated this deck extension from a permit that is a remodel of a kitchen, bathroom, floors, windows, doors, siding, etc. And the topic at hand is just the extension of the deck. And so we've looked at the appeal and all the comments made by neighbors, and we've responded to each one of them. So we'd like to know if the commission members have had a chance to see our response to all the objections and the appeal.
Yes, those were included in the packet, so we have received those ahead of time. Yep.
And were they read? I mean, I know there's a lot there, and I'm just trying to, you know, in the interest of time, not go over too many things that we've already seen.
Yeah, I've certainly read them. We are pretty thorough in preparing for these meetings, so generally everyone should have read those. Yes.
Great. Thanks. You know, we've never done this before, so we really don't know, you know, what to expect.
Okay.
The key point is the finding of fact that was issued on March 19th, and that basically approved the extension of our deck. And the analysis, as you can see, was thorough and extensive. And basically, it's not an increase of a nonconformance. The nonconformance, it's a legally existing structure. That doesn't meet the current lot coverage standards, but there's no increase in the nonconformance. And, you know, no matter how many times or ways the appeal is said, it just doesn't make it true. It just doesn't increase the nonconformance. As Mr. Nielsen said, you know, the appeal also referenced a variance, including Ms. Lassen's appeal. There's no request for a variance. That's just not applicable in this case. So we'd like to point out that many of the objections don't really relate to code issues. We responded to them anyway, but there's things like, it's a massive structure, it's huge, it's gonna decrease property values, you know, things like that. And you know, I'd just like to reference everybody to our page 2 of the response, which would be page 17 in your packet. And just look at that, and there it is. You know, it shows clearly what we're asking for, what the amount of structure would be, and I just think from any measure, it's pretty hard pressed to say that adds considerable mass and visual intrusion or other types of descriptions. And, you know, it's a little frustrating to us because, you know, Ms. Lassen is making those statements, but she had a remodel 12 years ago that pushed her living space 9 feet towards the street in an area of more than 100 square feet of vertical wall and the deck out 4 feet, and that seems to be fine, but a horizontal extension seems to be this massive structure. And so it's just not consistent really with what we think, you know, is reality. Another objection is impinging on privacy and security and safety issues. The deck, it doesn't change anything. We have decks that are adjacent to each other. Ms. Lassen has a barrier that's somewhat of a screen. Privacy is easily screened. It's not something that's a very difficult measure, but it's not an inherent right either. And security and safety are certainly no different than they are now. We'd also like to point out that Ms. Lassen has a window that overlooks our deck. And in terms of safety and security, in her remodel, it was identified that that window was against fire code. And it was specifically disallowed. That entire wall is a mutual wall. It has to meet fire code. And that window that wall was identified as no openings. And instead of doing something about it in her remodel, I don't know what happened. Ignored it, but she actually replaced that window with an opening window that opens out onto the deck, which is against the deed. The deeds clearly say she can't do that. So when we applied for a permit recently, this last year, again, the building department identified the mutual wall and the window as not meeting fire code. And we have a similar situation in the back bedroom, which is a window that overlooks her deck. So what do we do? Well, you know, the building department said it doesn't meet fire code, we took it out. You know, it now has a wall that's a 2-hour fire rated wall. And, you know, it's somewhat baffling, but, you know, we spoke with Ms. Lassen about it, and she said it's been there for 20 years, it's fine. So this is a sort of a frustrating effort for us to try to just kind of be common sense actions to just get this 7-foot deck extension, which seems to be proposed. There's a couple other issues there that, we're only addressing because she brought them up. One is that she has an easement to her downstairs basement door, and she cites a 10-foot high post, which she also has a 10-foot high post right next to what will be ours. And we are providing 6 feet of space to access that door. So we think that's more than adequate and generous. In fact, we had a choice of making this deck right up to adjacent to hers with a firewall to the ground. And we chose to offset it by 3 feet and to the east-west. And also stagger it 2 feet back because we thought visually that's a more balanced and reasonable approach. So Ms. Lassen does come at 3 feet in big letters, Cal caps, as if that's an unusual situation. And you can walk around the block and a few blocks away and you'll see townhouses with decks extending right next to each other 3 feet apart. It's not an unusual thing. And the key is that it's per code. So, I'm sorry, what's that? Okay. So she also references substantial footings that we'll have to have. And, you know, it's about a 3-foot footing, which is similar in size to hers that she put in. The difference is that ours is on our side of the property line. And you can look at her building plans, and we pulled them and looked, and there it is. By design, her footing crosses the property line. And it's, you know, there's a clear statement, you know, and I know this isn't the City of Hood River's responsibility, property line issues, but it is unlawful to do that. And it's clearly on her building permit that the owner is responsible understanding the property lines with the, you know, information that you can't cross them. And again, then she put the wrap on her post and put it's 5 inches into our parking area. So again, we don't want to make every little point about this, but it shows a pattern of disregard for the code and the laws and common sense, which it concerns us as a neighbor, but I, to be frank, it very much concerns us as someone who's a member of the planning commission. That's just, it's pretty blatant. And you can look up the codes and look up her plans and you can see this, it's right there. So we kind of don't understand why we're here at all, you know, because it seems like a pretty clear and simple and case where we should be allowed to do this. And particularly when you look at 40 to 50 planning issue of fact per year, only one or two get appealed, and it's pretty rare for any of those to be sustained. So it's just a little baffling to us, I gotta say, that, you know, that here we are. But we were just, I guess, kind of, you know, given that you have all our notes in more detail, I think we just kind of let it here. We would respectfully request that the Planning Commission deny the appeal so we can finish our project and enjoy our home. And we appreciate your time, we really do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Milton and Susan.
I'd just like to add that, you know, we understand she doesn't want this to happen, but, and that we really address these issues because she brought them up. But we just want to be able to use our property as we're legally allowed to do. We're following the rules, and so that's all we ask.
All right, thank you. Any questions from the commission on the applicant? Clarifying questions? Okay, seeing none. So we're going to move now to testimony from others. So we will go to proponents. That is other folks who are in support of the application. So if you are in support of the application, please raise your hand and we will promote you. Next, we will have anyone neutral. All right. Okay, so let's go to those opposed to the application. Tina, do you want to come off mute and speak? If you want, raise your hand. All right, you are permitted to talk, Tina.
Am I unmuted? Am I there?
Yeah, you're here. Yep.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. I appreciate y'all taking the time to listen and weigh in on this tonight. For starters, I think it helps to explain the layout of these townhouses a bit better. Unlike the townhouses that are being built today, these are not at all symmetrical floor plans. So they were designed and built as offset rectangles, essentially, to give both of these homes some separation and some privacy. They're both built into a slope with garages on the ground floor. My unit, 1009, is offset more to the north. It's two stories, a footprint that meets lot coverage standards. It was designed with an elevated deck on the north side, originally designed that way, and then the east half of which I enclosed with all the proper building permits in 2008. Now the Donnan unit at 1011 is a one-story unit. That one is farther south with a deck on the north side that isn't elevated. It actually sits on top of the garage. So that unit exceeds lot coverage standards, so it's a non-conforming structure. So the whole place was built in 1987 as a duplex, and then it was converted into a townhouse in 1996. So, I mean, local builders kind of joke that this was the Wild West in Hood River when all sorts of crazy stuff was built. And this definitely falls into that category. It's, you know, it's a bit of a Frankenstein kind of place. It's got, yes, it has windows in weird places. It has doors in weird places. It has overlapping roof lines, the whole bit. But Susan and I both knew what we were signing up for when we bought them. I bought my unit in 2000, shortly after Susan and her husband at the time bought theirs. So fast forward to today, the current decision approves an addition to this non-conforming structure that exceeds lot coverage. It is allowing an elevated extension over the driveway, creating a 218 square foot deck that will literally be 3 feet from my deck and will have direct sight lines into my home. I mean, 3 feet. I mean, the distance of your outstretched arm is how close together these will be. And in the midst of a global pandemic, I mean, I just laugh because the planning commission and planning staff haven't even been in the same room in over a year, but now the planning department is approving this. It just seems completely incongruent with current city and state policy. So getting into the nitty gritty of the matter, I guess I have three specific points of contention regarding this decision. So number one, the code clearly states that the purpose of chapter 1705 is to, quote, permit nonconformities to continue, but not to encourage their perpetuation, unquote. So if a building exceeds lot coverage standards, by definition, it's already too big for its lot. So to allow an elevated structure layered on top of that, along with additional footings and posts that will have to be built, is absolutely encouraging the perpetuation of a nonconformity. It's adding mass, it's adding visual intrusion, and it's creating essentially a more flagrant nonconformity of a nonconformity. Number two, 1705040 addresses exceptions for residential structures. Now this is, I mean, frankly, I think this is poorly written code that contradicts and is subordinate to 1705, which again says we shouldn't be encouraging nonconformities. So I understand that we've added things to the code or the code was written to allow exceptions, but I think those are intended for extenuating circumstances. And to me, this is merely a case of someone with a large deck wanting a large deck. And 1705040 also fails to take into account the effect on townhouses. And I think this is, frankly, a case of unintended consequences, because when you take this funky Frankenstein design from the 1980s, you can't always overlay the code into these patchwork of additions and exceptions, because you end up with properties like this. They morph into homes that are 3 feet apart, and it just introduces a whole new host of concerns in terms of safety and home security. And I know we just heard that that's no big deal, but I mean, I have no control now over how well, I mean, I have no control over how well the Don End residence is going to be secured, or how often it's vacant, or how often it's rented. Yet if this expansion is improved, I mean, anyone who has access to that unit can easily access my property. There's a 3 foot gap in the deck. So by allowing this extension, the city is making my home more vulnerable to break-ins. And I'd say that's a pretty significant unintended consequence. I mean, that door doesn't even have a lock on it. It was built as an elevated deck. And so the fact that I now have, you know, the need to add security cameras or locks, to me seems like we're creating a new problem. And then finally, number three, the original nonconformity was created by a building and a driveway that exceeded lot coverage. So an elevated deck, and again, those posts and footings, that's a different and new nonconforming use. And if you look at nonconforming use, you know, that can't, nonconforming uses cannot increase a nuisance. And I will say that having someone 3 feet away, able to stare into my living room is a nuisance. And having to add more security to my home is a nuisance. Okay, I was actually gonna sum this up here, but because we brought up this whole window and door thing, I don't think this is related, but I don't know Mr. Steigelman. All of this happened well before he was in the picture, and you know, he is not my neighbor. I don't know that he's been here more than 2 weeks at a time. But anyway, I feel like this is just ancient history stuff that I don't know, maybe I should leave it to you guys if you even want to talk about this. But I sort of feel like this was painted that I'm some sort of nefarious neighbor. So I guess I want to address it. The window, there was a window, this unit again, this Frankenstein building, this was built with a window. It has never come up as an issue in 20 years. This has never been an issue. It has no bearing on this deck, but we'll talk about it if you want to. It is one of those Frankenstein things. It's high on a wall, my living room on one side, the existing Don and deck on the other side. I mean, the bottom of it is 6 feet. The top of it is 9 feet. I would have to stand on a ladder to see out of it, but it adds nice Western light. You know, I've always enjoyed the light that window adds. It was not, that's erroneous to say this was done when I did my remodel. The windows, the original to the house, I did replace all the windows in the house shortly after I bought it with double pane windows. So it had nothing to do with my remodel. Their remodeler brought it up and got the city involved because they said it doesn't meet fire code. So I since have talked with suppliers all over the West Coast about replacing it with fire safe glass that would meet current code. The estimates actually came in between $3,500 and $5,000. And meanwhile, I've talked with my builder and home inspectors, and they've said that, you know, if this existed when you bought the house, you know, and for that matter, when Susan bought her house, that I don't have to replace that. So what's interesting to me is I have reason to doubt that entire common wall actually meets fire code safety standards. I mean, when they had ripped out their kitchen and were replacing their cabinets, I was cleaning underneath the sink. And I mean, I could see into their unit. So, I mean, you know, I think, again, going back to the Wild West, there was a lot of loosey-goosey stuff done with fire safety. And I honestly think that window is probably, you know, the least of it. So that's the window. So that's why that sits where it is. The sunroom was a project that was designed and permitted in 2008. Again, doesn't really have anything to do with what we're talking about tonight, but I enclosed the east half of what was an existing deck. So it was not an expansion. It was not adding any lot coverage. It was covering, you know, it was closing in part of a deck. One thing that's interesting about that is I did talk with Susan about this. I actually, because this all came up, I dug out an email from October of 2007. So here we go. And here's what I wrote to her. I said, I was also weighing the pros and cons of extending the roof so it would be a covered deck. Since it's in the shade much anyway, I thought it'd be nice to go use it even when it's raining spring and fall for grilling and such, and maybe making the east half of my deck a sunroom type space. And then Susan responded, I guess I'd have to say that I am opposed to your extending the roof line in any way, and I don't know what the code is, but I would question whether you could do it anyway. It would obstruct my view, not to mention light. The east side is a different story, and I have no problem with that. End of email. So I respected Susan's feedback. I did not extend the roof line. I enclosed only the east half. I've never had a complaint about it in 13 years. So that's those projects. So to sum this up, I guess, you know, for better or for worse, I feel like Hood River City Code, you know, it's often open to interpretation, right? Otherwise you wouldn't need to notice the public on issues like this. You wouldn't even really need a planning commission. So planning staff originally noticed the public about these expansion plans, and four households in one block took the time to file comments in opposition. No one wrote in support of this. Then the city looked at this non-conforming structure and the mixed bag of code, and they interpreted it in one way. So I'm here appealing that decision because my neighbors and I interpreted it in another way. The purpose of 1705 is to tolerate non-conforming structures, not to allow someone to layer more stuff on top of an already too dense lot and create a host of new problems in terms of security and safety and privacy So I just ask that you guys consider these impacts as you take another look at this decision. And I really thank you for your time and attention to this matter.
All right, thank you, Tina. Any questions for Tina? All right, we're now gonna go back to the applicant's rebuttal. So Susan and Milton, you get a chance to respond. Okay. We hear you.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. So there's a team made a bunch of statements there. First, she said she had all the proper building permits. And her building was approved by the building department, City of Hood River Department, with notes. With notes that we have, and you can look them up. And one of the notes is that no openings in the common law. So when we started looking at how that could have ever existed, we can't find a final building permit. There is no signed off building permit on record. So that's a little concern. We don't know if it was ever inspected, but certainly the approved drawing, the building is not per approved drawing.
And replacing that window with a window that opens onto my deck is absolutely was not allowed. And it violates not only the permit, which said no openings allowed, and it was a fixed window. It was not a window that opened. She took it and made it a window that opened. And then, and also our deeds say no changes to the common law without mutual agreement, which I never agreed to that. So I guess, I mean, this is really uncomfortable and really unfortunate that we have to do this, but that, when you're objecting about privacy and, security, and you put a window that opens onto my deck, and you're complaining that my deck, which is already adjacent, there's no difference in the security or the privacy is, that's really not affected by this decision. That it just seems like, we're talking on one hand, with, one side of your hat, or I forget what the word is, but, just that doesn't really make sense. And so, I think that really getting back to the issue, which is that we're a non-conforming structure, we're not asking to change the, we're not asking to enlarge our living, structure, we're just asking for 108 square foot section of deck to be built. And with a post that's the same as her post, and as she has plenty of access, we've chosen to offset as much as possible to make it as amenable and as visually appealing as possible. So I think that's really what this is about.
Yeah, I think the finding of fact is pretty clear. Like we said, no matter how many times or how many ways it's said, the non-conformance, this doesn't add to the non-conformance. That's clear in the code. And I guess I'm a little bit surprised when it's like, well, the code's there, but they didn't mean that. The codes are there for a reason. That building was built and, Tina made significant modifications to the look and the staggering and the balance and whatever. So then when we want to do something, it's terrible and it's going to add, visual intrusion and other things. Actually, if you look at the building plans, it was extended out 4 feet from what existed before. Yeah. So, that wasn't quite accurate.
I think that also, part of what Tina said is very true, which is that, we bought a duplex and there are certain things that are inherent in purchasing a duplex property. You're right next to your neighbor. And that's just part of the set of things that you purchased into. And so she's extended her deck. I want to extend mine. I'm offset, so mine's much narrower than hers would be, but I don't think that should be disallowed, especially since it seems to be within the non-conforming criteria.
So Tina mentioned that three neighbors opposed.
Typically neighbors don't let them in if they approve.
We didn't corral people to coming here and support us. But I mean, the opposition, one neighbor said she's opposed to the huge houses being built in Hood River and cannot approve this massive expansion. I guess I just like you guys to look at the picture and make your own judgment about it. The people across the street, we can understand why friends want to support Ms. Lassie, but he's concerned about property values and he's concerned about Ms. Lassie's privacy. Property values are going to increase when you do a major kitchen, bathroom, floors, doors, siding, whatever remodel. So I don't want to go through all the comments of the neighbors and kind of pick them apart, but there's a lot of massive, visual, huge type words used consistently, which just aren't really, if nothing else, the deck actually adds some balance to the original structure because of the living space being pushed out 9 feet towards the street. So, I guess we'll just leave it at that. You know, it's, we'll just leave it there.
All right. All right. Thanks, Milton and Susan. You remind me, I didn't ask if anyone else was opposed and wanted to speak. So we may be calling back on you for rebuttal if anybody else decides to speak. So calling last call for anyone opposed. If you are in the audience, I see a hand going up for David Simon. So if David, you are now permitted to talk, if you come on mute.
Great, thank you. My name is David Simon. I'm along with my wife, reside across from Ms. Donnan and Ms. Lassen. And yes, we are one of the four neighbors in opposition to Ms. Donnan's request. For clarity, not because we're friends with Tina and not because we're corralled into saying anything. I think that's a little bit insulting. Frankly, we're in opposition because we do believe that this expansion of a deck into the larger deck would impact adversely property values. And we are concerned about privacy issues in our neighborhood and security issues. And so that's the basis for our objection, not based on any personality issues. I guess before I go on, thank you for the time to present our perspective here. Thank you to Mr. Nielsen for his thoughtful and professional and accessible approach to allowing us to weigh in here. We have known Ms. Donner for many years. She's the property owner. We only recently met Mr. Singleman, so I don't know if he's her attorney, but he's not the property owner. In terms of having kind of the history of the neighborhood, like many places in Hood River, we all have been concerned about these privacy issues and security issues because we have sometimes vacant or dark houses and we have transitions of short-term and long-term renters. Ms. Donnan has had a series of renters. She has not occupied this property as long as we've been here, which is since, I think, 2010. She's occasionally been here on weekends. The house has generally been in disrepair and an eyesore. And so we're pleased that she's putting money into the building, into the property. It was greatly needed. We're really excited about that. I think the whole neighborhood is. But it doesn't mean that she's going to be there full time. It doesn't mean she might not rent it out again based on past concern. And so privacy issues, I think, are legitimate and do give us standing to reasonably object when we have concerns about that. And I won't cover more of what Ms. Lassen mentioned about the security issue, but I think it is a real issue. I think it's also interesting that Mr. Singleman kind of called out Ms. Lassen's integrity. And I hear Ms. Donnan being very passionate about the window that nobody can see through really upsetting her. And yet she's proposing to do something that would eviscerate the privacy of her neighbor. And so her common sense objections to the windows seems like they should also be common sense objections to the expansion of the deck into a larger deck that would allow her and her guests or tenants or whoever else is on that deck to basically not provide any or to eliminate any privacy that Ms. Lassen has in her home. For us, that is a concern because I think it does diminish property values. If you have to close your windows all the time because what was now a window that had nobody on the other side, now you have people on the deck looking directly in your house. I do think that degrades property values, and it does degrade peaceful enjoyment. And I that part of the impact, I think, is a significant nuisance. I'm not an attorney. I heard Ms. Lassen's discussion of the code's purpose. I would also think that kind of the common sense intent of the code is to promote community, to provide for quiet enjoyment, to provide benefits of neighborliness in neighborhoods, and to preserve and protect neighbors and property values. And to the extent that there are conflicts in the code, including kind of 1704 versus 1705 that go counter to this intent, I would hope the commission would think about the intent as opposed to what might be conflicting language in making a kind of common sense response to the expansion of this deck and the elimination of this privacy. On more of a technical basis, I reviewed section 1705.02 of the code. My read of that is that in subsection three, that no alterations, I'm reading now, no alterations can be made which would increase the nonconformity unless the planning director affirmatively finds in part that nuisances or nuisance conditions are not increased. I did not see in Mr. Millison's report that he affirmatively found that a nuisance condition would not be increased. And that seems to be, if I'm reading this right, a condition of the code. So I looked for a defined term nuisance in sections one, section 17 of the code. I didn't find it. Nuisance is not capitalized here. So, you know, kind of looking at common sense, kind of layman's definitions of nuisances and looking at Merriam-Webster and Wikipedia to the extent those are valid, these describe nuisances as activities that are harmful or annoying to others, those that affect and create impact on quiet enjoyment, and that restrict or impact a person's right to use and enjoy their home. So all those things seem to be directly what the code should be about. Why would we encourage the expansion of a nonconforming use that is going to create a nuisance where it doesn't exist and degrade the quiet enjoyment of another citizen's home and reduce their property values, and by extension of that, impact property values and of neighbors and the sense of neighborhood? So those are the reasons why we object. And just to reiterate, it is not a personal issue. We would like to make sure, you know, not have any issues with our neighbors. Perhaps Ms. Donna will move here full time sometime. I don't know. If she does, you know, nobody wants to have any conflict in the neighborhood, but we're all speaking candidly and openly and honestly about our perspectives. And I believe not based on any bias. And so I appreciate the opportunity to make these statements and appreciate the commission's consideration of what I've said on behalf of myself and my wife. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, David. Anybody else want to testify opposed in the audience? If you do, please raise your hand and we will promote you. And then Milton and Susan, you'll have a chance to address if there's anything that you want to address in that statement by David. Okay, let's go back to you, Milton and Susan. Final rebuttal. Okay, if we could bring you off mute. I think you're good to go.
Yeah.
So yep, we hear you.
Let me, I'm going to be off mute.
Yeah, you're good. We hear you. Yep.
I just wanted to address the fact that, yes, I've had renters in the past and I kind of needed to do that financially. I don't anymore and I won't have any more rentals. And part of my remodel was when I'm done with renters, I'll remodel. And so that's the case now. And I do plan to spend much more time down there, but at this point it won't be full time. You know, maybe in the future it will. So you know, I love Hood River and I really want strong community there. And so you know, I appreciate you know that input, David, especially from you. Thank you. And I also just want to say, you know, I feel like what we're asking for is really reasonable. And, you know, we, like I said, we've had, you know, we offset, we pushed it over 3 feet. We did what we need, what we felt we could do to make that more amenable and really pleasant for both parties, because, you know, everybody, you know, along the street, we have a neighbor who's got a deck right above ours. He looks right down onto our deck, and, you know, they're not a nuisance. They're super nice people, and they're, you know, they're not having parties all night, which, you know, everybody knows me and knows I'm a super early bird anyway. But so I just think that, you know, we're reasonable people. We're asking for a reasonable small addition to a deck, which is over already, you know, we're not increasing the nonconformity. So I just like to reiterate that.
I just have one clarification. It was sort of mentioned that there might be a security concern in that you can access this deck without a key. I don't see that the staircase goes straight to this deck, correct?
There is no staircase to the deck. There's no access to the deck other than through our house or by a ladder, which somebody could get up on a ladder in this license deck as well. So we're not increasing the part that's adjacent to her deck, where they're still conjoined at the edge. So there's no increase in that.
Okay.
Security goes now.
All right. All right. Thank you for your testimony. All right. So let's now close the hearing. Let's go back to the staff for a recap. Any further comments from Dustin or anyone other? Bill, you have a question?
Yeah, I would like for Dustin, because he didn't necessarily hit on it, but we had some questions about it or public comment on it, for him to, I guess, state his findings under 17, I think it was 0402. Is that right, Dustin? Where we had you did do some finding about use 1705020.
Yeah. So in our findings, we did not declare the use to be non-conforming, and the findings in the staff report refer to this as an existing townhouse. The proposed use is still an existing townhouse, so it does not reflect a use that was previously approved and now non-conforming in the area. It's still zoned for residential. The townhouse is still a permitted use. The use request is to not expand a non-conforming use. The use itself is actually conforming. It's townhouse. So I think when our interpretation of the code is that if there was a use that was in this zone that predated the residential, such as a commercial business, that is an area where the consideration for expanding a use, in this instance, maybe a commercial use that didn't comply with the underlying zone, would be limited by this code. So that's how the findings are written now, is the use is a townhouse. Prior to this, the use as proposed still remains a residential townhouse, permitted subject to standards.
That's it for me.
Okay, any other questions for Dustin to clarify in his recap and staff recap? Okay, Dustin, any other comments?
Mr. Chair, I'd be here at your pleasure to, as you all deliberate.
All right, thanks. With that, we will close the hearing. That means it is the end of public testimony and public input. And now we will move to deliberation. Who wants to get us started? I would appreciate kind of hearing everybody on this matter tonight. It seems that we have the issue of whether this non-conforming structure enlargement of the deck is in any way increasing the non-conformity, according to the notes here around the non-conforming structure. It's essentially a no change because it is not increasing the lot area. Remembering that lot area is really talking about the area covered by buildings or decks or parking areas that are essentially are talking about buildings as opposed to green space. And that has been interpreted as essentially a net change, a net zero change for the coverage. All right, who wants to get us started? Bill, I see you're off mute. Any thoughts or input?
Well, I appreciate that we have a lot of comment from the neighbors. I did read the staff report in detail and I read all the neighbors' comments in detail. And I think that I would agree with the staff findings that if we're evaluating this pretty clearly against identified criteria, which is what our job is.
Yeah.
The only thing we really have to identify here is, are we increasing the nonconformity? And I think when we add up those three areas together to determine lot coverage, it's not changing at all. So I, at this point, even though we have kind of a lot of testimony about other factors, I'm really looking at the criteria and I would agree with the staff findings.
Thanks, Bill. Okay, I'm gonna go call on others just so we can get at everybody's input. How about Amy?
I can go.
Oh, Erica, okay. Erica's, yeah, go ahead, Erica.
Yeah, I agree. Since it's not changing the lot coverage, I think it's passing the intent of the code, even if it's got some other negative impacts.
Okay, so critical issue for you is lot coverage and it's not changing from a way that we calculate lot coverage.
Correct.
Okay. So you are in agreement with the planning director's decision?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right. I will go to Amy.
Yes, I would agree. I agree with the planning director's decision. I appreciate the other concerns and the other factors, but we have to look at the specific piece. And from what I can tell, it makes sense.
Okay, thanks, Amy. And Megan.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Thank you. I commiserate with the, would Tina be called the appellant? I get so confused sometimes with this. Yes. Even the support and not support, I was like, wait, are we supporting the appeal or the, I commiserate with the appellant, Tina. However, I support Dustin's original decision, and I know there might be unintended consequences, but we have to look at the way it's written now. So I support Dustin.
All right. Thanks, Megan. So I too commiserate with Tina in that what's at stake here is it's enlarging the structure, and yet it doesn't essentially change the nonconformity because it's essentially building over an area that's already counted into a a lot coverage ratio already. So I take the point. I think in terms of just response from the neighbor, David, and others, I actually see that increasing the visibility and giving people space to be sitting and enjoying the view and enjoying the street actually would increase the security up and down the street. Having ways that buildings interact with the public space, I actually think is a bonus to pull people to the front. So I actually don't think I would actually say that would increase the security of the street. not that that's part of our criteria tonight. So I think I'm going to stick with this idea of really what's at issue here is lot coverage, and that that's not changing the way that we, and, you know, based on the way that we look at lot coverage calculations. So that is, so I'm in agreement with the planning director. So with that, any other comments from the commission or questions? I would entertain a motion. And like Megan, I'm not quite sure how we direct this motion, because essentially it would be a motion to deny the appeal of the planning director's decision to approve a request to expand a legally established non-conforming structure to the addition of a deck on the 1011 Lincoln Street. So I would entertain a motion in that regard from anyone in the Planning Commission.
I'll make the motion. I will try and make it, I think, correctly. I'll make a motion that we approve file 2020-35 interpretation, which is the planning director's interpretation, and that we reject the appeal.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second. This is Erica.
All right. Thanks, Erica. Second. So just to recap, we have a motion on the floor to approve file 2020-35 interpretation by the planning director to allow this project to build this deck at 1011 Lincoln Street and reject the appeal by Tina Lassen. Any further discussion? All right, all in favor, if we could just go around and make sure we get everybody. Let me start with you, Amy.
All in favor. All right, I'm in favor. All right.
Okay, Bill?
Aye.
Erica?
Aye.
Thank you. Megan?
Aye.
Aye, and chair votes aye, motion passes. All right, that is that case. And we do have some minutes to take care of before we wrap up tonight. Thank you for those that dialed in today. Thank you to Milton, Susan, and Tina. All right. Back to, we've got some meeting minutes to approve. Those are the meetings from February 16th, March 15th, and April 5th. The reason we've been holding on to these minutes from February, Bill, is because you wanted to make some comments around it.
Yes. And
do you have any changes or issues you want to have the minutes updated?
Yes. Well, I wanted to have a quick talk about it, and I don't remember specifically what set of minutes we were talking about. And I didn't go back and try and recover the specific set of minutes that we're here to approve tonight. I had one, I guess, area of concern, and that was related to our middle housing code. We, as a planning commission, were asked to make a recommendation for the code. I think we took some straw man polls on particular issues in that code set, and we had some cases where we had unanimous opinion about things. And I left that particular planning commission meeting with a very clear understanding that we were going to have our recommendation preserved and presented to council.
Yep.
And when I went to kind of go read the packet that was going to council, which was, you know, sent out to us, but, I looked at it maybe on a Friday and the council meeting was on a Monday. I was pretty surprised that some of our recommendations were not contained, as I thought, in the staff report or in the code set that was being presented to council. I did kind of raise that issue to Dustin. We talked about it, but I thought it was concerning enough based upon where we left the meeting that I wanted us to just have a discussion about it. Mm-hmm. One meeting when we were when I had the minutes in front of me, we were able to discuss. Dustin wasn't there. He was actually presenting our findings to council on that same day. So I figured we should just hold off and have a discussion while we were all in the room together so that we at least have a clear understanding about process going forward. And I don't know that we need to like revisit the past, but I just feel like it would be good for us to be all on the same page, both the commission and the staff, so that we know how our voice is going to be taken forward.
Okay. And just to kind of try and put some color around what you're trying to describe, there were a couple of things that you had raised around sort of parking in the front of a house or maybe sidewalk setbacks. So there were a couple of things that came up that, I think you were a bit concerned about how it was documented and interpreted and then our message taking forward to council, right?
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I mean, the codes have passed and this is kind of water under the bridge, but I'm feeling the reason I wanted to even have this discussion was so that we understood process going forward for places where we're the recommending body.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that staff opinion can be different than the commission opinion, but I want to I think that we need to understand how our opinion gets officially communicated. And in a case where we have a staff opinion that is different from a planning commission opinion, I think it might warrant staff at least highlighting that for us. And also maybe giving the commission the opportunity to send a representative to, you know, I guess, present our position. Because there was a spot where we had some pretty unanimous positions on some of those. And I don't want to say that didn't happen, because I think, you know, in Dustin's staff report, and I saw some of the presentation, but I just think, it would be clear for us to kind of just have a clear process going forward.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me, and I know there was a few things that were going on. I think it would be good for us to kind of clearly identify, okay, so here are all of the issues. Here are the issues that are somewhat, there's some contention around those issues that need to be weighed in on, right? There's a lot of issues that were just fine. There's some issues that we need to weigh in on. And I think we should identify moving forward those that we are weighing in on, that we do have a poll or a straw man poll that basically says, you know, the planning commission wants to do one thing or the other thing, or they're split. We did a bit of that in these meeting minutes from the fifth, from back in February, but there's some areas where I think we could have probably been more clear around this is the suggestion from the planning commission. And then the staff can do what they're going to do, but at least that our message is documented. So I appreciate that comment. Any other, to that end, any other comments from the commission?
This is Megan. I will say a couple of remarks about that day. Number one, I will fully admit that the item of contention, the parking, whether it be in the front or the back, mm-hmm. I have since, I just want to give Dustin a little credit here. even though I was against mandating it in the back, since I have read the Missing Middle Housing book by Daniel Perelek, which I kick myself that we weren't forced to read that before this. I understand why. I understand why he was, or why it was proposed that way. So I want to give him credit. But I do wish that the commission's opinion on that was represented. And I also feel like we were stuck between a rock and a hard place, because this is my second point, that I think it's very tough when you have a planning commission and a city council meeting on the same night, especially when there are two, when both topics were the topic that is being discussed at city council is one that we passed on to them. So we couldn't even participate in the city council meeting if we wanted to, to correct that. And then third, if you'll never hear me say this, because I am Miss Speed Queen. I like things done fast, but I felt like the both Missing Middle discussions and the TSP discussions, which was that night that we couldn't be at that council meeting, were, it felt a little rushed to me. And that's the only time you'll ever see hear me say that. So I know that's a little bit more elaborative than what Bill initially brought up, but it was all those three things circling in my head that day.
Okay. But at this point, Dustin, it is water under the bridge, right? Because we, the Planning Commission staff, have presented to City Council, and they have what they have, correct?
Yeah, I think it's important, though, to note, you know, we really want to be mindful when we as staff and we have departures from the recommendation. I always want to make sure that we never bury that intentionally or unintentionally and advertise that dispute, because we're all providing input to the City Council for their policy decision. And so the more opportunities they have to hear different voices, really the more informed decision they can make. So I think that's it's important to advertise the differences. I think that's from my perspective. And I think I tried to do that in their summary sheet when they get, you know, hundreds of pages of comments on the front. We want to know where Planning Commission staff depart. And there is actually both of that for the TSP as well as middle housing, where we had departures from different inputs. And I think that's pretty normal. I do want to make sure that Planning Commission doesn't feel like their recommendations are buried. They may not be the recommendation, but that goes forward, but they need to be represented. And I want to make sure that I'm really mindful and careful of that. So I appreciate those comments. And I also want to make sure, as we go through, if there's an impasse and you don't get to something, that really goes as a non-recommendation a lot of times. I can't really sort that out. So as we do legislative and we don't get to a finding, we got to be mindful of what we're sending forward and making sure that we get consensus on something rather than a lack of consensus and call it a draw. That I don't think that's particularly helpful for folks. So that's something I want to help facilitate, do, and make sure that we don't end up with draws on things or a lack of consensus. I think we should try to get to something. So.
All right. Point taken.
One thing I would like to note too with that is that I think sometimes when we're having very large discussions, like for example, on the TSP where we're talking about a lot of different things, I think it's really easy for some of the things to be buried. So kind of in a, for a process thing of maybe, I'm not sure the best way, maybe it's just us making sure it's very called out and highlighted and just noted in the minutes of when there's things that we think should just be highlighted, it not necessarily maybe a recommendation, but should be highlighted to make sure that it kind of gets passed along. Because I think it's very easy when we're having these discussions that things do kind of get buried accidentally out of no one's fault. It just kind of happens. So I think that's just one thing. And specifically what I'm referring to is, at least to my recollection, I had remembered that we had talked about the Safe Routes to School plan and referring it somewhere in the TSB to refer back to that when it is finished, the current project that's happening. But either I didn't remember it correctly or I don't know. But so I think that's just something maybe to be cognizant of going forward when we're having very large discussions. And that should have been something that too, I should have confirmed that it had been highlighted and noted. To make sure it had gotten in there. So just a thought and just something I've observed.
Okay. Thanks, Amy.
Can I ask a clarifying question?
Jen.
About what Amy was just saying. Is there something omitted from the minutes that needs to be revised with respect to that particular point?
I'm honestly not sure. And maybe if there's other commissioners that can, you know, either back me up or say, Amy, that didn't happen, that would be helpful. But I just remembered us talking about how we should highlight that somewhere in the TSB that they should refer to projects in the future, or that they should refer to the Safe Routes to School plan that was being created when they were looking at specific projects. And I might be not remembering that correctly, as it was a while ago, but
okay. So which set of minutes you're talking about? The March 15th minutes, I guess.
Yes, I think it was the second TSP one.
That's what you can do here, is the 15th, offer revisions, yeah, to the minutes. So if there's a revision that needs to be made.
Just to help point out, if you go to page March 15th set of minutes, page 42 in your packet, it starts off with, it moves from Commissioner Ramey to Ramey ask how recommendations, and then it dives into safe routes, as mentioned there.
Okay.
Which page in the minutes, Justin?
42.
That was page. Yeah, 42.
42, and then it goes on to continue.
Which page of the minutes, not the packet?
2 of 6, page 2 of 6 of.
Thank you.
March 15th.
And 3 of 6 as well. It refers to safe routes once again.
Yeah, Amy, in that particular case, I do think that I do remember those projects being called out and the work that Kevin had done. And back to your earlier comment, I think, you know, one of the things, yes, there was a lot thrown at us in the TSP discussion, but in Kevin's defense, this hadn't been the first time that most of us in the Planning Commission had seen the TSP discussion. So, you know, we've actually been looking at this document as part of the West Side discussion for some years. So it might have felt to you like there was a lot of information thrown at you. But for many of us, it was sort of a sort of final document to something that we've been talking about for a while. So that's probably why, you know, we didn't see it as a sort of, let's say, a big dump of information. It was essentially a documentation of something that we had talked about for a while. And unfortunately, you were out of the picture for a lot of that deliberation before.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yes, yep. No, that completely makes sense. And that wasn't a criticism. It just seemed like there was a lot of, I mean, and not necessarily all of the information, but there was a lot of just discussion. And yeah. I think that's what I'm saying. It's just that sometimes when there was a lot of discussion happening, it's very easy for some things maybe not to be highlighted at the end of the night. And especially, I think that was what, a three and a half hour meeting that
yeah.
we had?
I think,
super long night.
Yeah. No, I'm taking this to heart because I think You know, kind of the way I'd like to operate is to enter our deliberation with, let's say, a known quantity of items and then get everybody's input. I try and do that. But, you know, if we can kind of get in the habit of saying, okay, you know, out of everything that we're hearing, where do we want to focus our energy and have everybody weigh in? If that's three things or 13 things or 30 things, you know, let's try and identify what those are and make sure that we're all clear on everyone's positioning each of those before we move to the next one. So I'm taking that one into some learning here.
Makes sense. Thank you for all the help.
All right. So with that all said, any other comments or questions on the minutes from February 16th, March 15th, and April 5th?
I was not on the commission for the 5th. I was listening to it. So I would say if anybody else has any corrections to those, they should raise that. Otherwise, I could propose a motion.
Okay. I will entertain your motion.
Okay. I will make a motion that we approve the minutes from February 16th, 2021, February 15th, 2020, and April 5th. Whoops. I think that's I think the date wrong there. March 15th, 2021, and April 5th, 2021.
All right. Motion on the table to approve the three sets of meeting minutes that are on the table for February 16th, March 15th, April 5th. Do we have a second?
I second.
All right. Thanks, Megan. Any other further discussion? All right. All in favor? Let's go around the horn. Bill?
Aye.
Amy?
Aye.
Erica?
Aye.
Thank you. Megan?
Aye.
Aye. And chair votes aye. Thanks. All right. Any other comments, questions? Dustin, do we meet again?
Yeah, I don't know if I got on Zoom late or not, or I just missed it. Did we get a planning director's update at the beginning or not? Do you have any?
I guess my update would be, we'll parlay that right into next meeting. We don't have any QJR or quasi-judicial cases pending within 2 weeks, and I don't believe we have anything advertised. So no meeting for the next go around. We are moving through TSP and middle housing. The finalization, or those ordinances have been finaled. And we're going to be working into 2021 work plan, including some of the work regarding affordable housing production, audit of the code, not necessarily code changes, but an audit of what is some of the premier and key workability issues with the code. And some process improvements while we move on. So there will be some opportunities. We'll probably draw some from some of your input as code users and as code administrators in that project as part of the stakeholder group. And that's what we have on the horizon for some legislative matters. I don't believe we'll have a quasi-judicial case until May, where I think
we're already in May.
through June. Advertised in May to be heard in June.
Okay, so I heard there's no meeting in 2 weeks. Something might be coming around the judicial for June. Are you thinking you're going to tee that up for June? Okay.
Yeah. Usually we have to advertise 20 days out. So it takes some lead time. So I'm going to know we don't have advertisements out right now. For anything in 2 weeks. So.
Okay. What's your timeline for talking about building height?
Oh, that was going to be what I was going to ask.
We're going to keep this on you.
That'll go into code audit as some of the key features and problematic issues that we'll look at. So it's not going to get separated out from everything. It's in that look.
Okay.
We need to address some clear and objective standards. Not only just in building height, but in general planned unit developments and a number of other areas. So we will be, we'll be queuing that up and bringing that to you shortly. I think we started some of the housing scope issues, but we'll scope that and we'll return.
So is the code audit the new name for what we used to call the omnibus code amendments?
So the omnibus went right to changing it. This is taking a step back and really looking at it in some greater detail rather than just some fixes. I think there is a more meta look that needs to occur. Is the code workable? How many issues are there that need to be addressed by way of state law? Are there significant changes? And there's just going to have to be some reckoning of how the code becomes structured in the future and okay. In terms of process too. So
okay.
we're going, so, I'll be taking a step back from omnibus.
So. Okay. And so you think we're going to start to talk about that in June? We'll get one of our two hearings in June. Okay. No,
we won't start talking. We'll start to talk about that as staff in scoping some of the project and figuring out who are the stakeholders, what direction does it go, and when Planning Commission will be involved. So
okay.
We'll jump right into Planning Commission involvement. We'll spend some time and invest in the project organization and how do we get stakeholder involvement.
Okay. Bill?
But QJR will be next.
Sure. I think it would be great for us to have some involvement at the beginning of the process versus at the end. And I don't know if that is that the commission has a representative that's a stakeholder or something, but I feel like with middle housing, we caught the tail of it in the product, the pie was already made. And I think we are firsthand witnesses as staff is, and a lot of the development community and everybody else is to kind of where the workable and unworkable areas of our code are, where sections that are probably a priority to get addressed versus others might be. Does that make sense, at least getting that as part of the process?
Yep, I definitely understand where you're coming from on it. And I think part of this is not just having it wait for a legislative, but we have to pick out how do we organize our task force and stakeholders and how it's organized.
So. Yep. So just giving us some updates along the way as you progress through that would be good, is I guess what I'm asking. So
you bet.
I have a question for Dustin.
Oh, Megan.
First, I want to just make a quick plug to the book club that I've been belonging to, or I've been taking part in. Dustin, what's the name of the group? The Department of Land Conservation and Development?
Yep, DLCD.
Evan Manville has been great in running this book club and or the webinars, and Right Away was a fantastic book about pedestrian issues. Affordable City is right up our alley with what we're trying to work on. Missing Middle was great, and now I'm reading Designing Streets for Kids. And Erica's asked to borrow a couple, but please reach out if you want to borrow. They're all great reads and really quick with lots of pictures and diagrams and heart-wrenching stories, I will warn you. But Dustin, the missing middle code, anything dramatic change? I should know this and be on top of it reading city council takeaways, but any changes from what we passed along?
So some of the changes that occurred, I think probably one of the most significant one was in R1, there was an addition that would allow an extra area bonus for units under smaller than 800 square feet, similar to the R2 and R3 zones. I think that was one of the more significant changes. In the end, one parking space became the mandate. The restriction on short-term rentals was extended to properties within C1. essentially C1 properties would have to act like residential zones for the purposes of short-term rentals. So the prohibition was removed, but the restrictions that that everyone would follow the current short-term rental regulations, and they would expand actually to C1 properties, that was incorporated. Some limitation on front yard parking was embedded into the code, but it really deferred to the underlying zoning code. Now that was the outcome of that. There was some relaxation on design requirements for front porches that came into play, but all in all, I wouldn't consider any of those a massive regulatory shift from where Planning Commission went. I think there was some details and some ideas, but I don't think there was anything fundamentally that changed.
Great, thank you so much.
All right. Any other comments, questions?
I just want to add that I also have the books that Megan is referring to. So if there are more demand, I also have a copy.
I also have a bunch of the missing books. We're not working on the code now, but they are significant, and they talk a lot about some design philosophy and walkability. I think there's still some good lessons there. And I think I have four or five of them. So I have a stack of, you're willing to, if you check them out, we could have book club. So
excellent.
It is very worth it. I highly recommend, even though we're kind of past that, it still informs future planning meetings that we have. And Dustin, I really wish you would have forced that down our throat. I would have loved to read that. Thank you.
All right. If that's it, I think it's a wrap for today. Thanks everyone for participating today. I know it was a tough one to prepare for and go through, and I know it took a good amount of soul searching to think about today's problem. So I appreciate that for everyone. All right.
Thank you.
Have a great week. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thank you all.
Yeah.
Bye.